the next stricter definition, heart death. Okay, what happens in heart death? Well, you know, here's your medical explanation of what happens in heart death. And you say, well, people come back from heart death all the time. Yes, they do. They come back from flat heart wave measurements, EKG. They come back from those all the time. But it's not the coming back that we're talking about. It's talking about what they experienced during that heart attack episode. Okay, then the next toughest one is the EEG, the flat brain, and it's much rarer to come back from flat brain experiences. Probably the number one category of people who come back from that are people who fall through ice in a lake or something, and they're sort of suspended animation. But for the most part, you don't have too many people who come back from flat brainwave situations. And so now we're getting stricter and stricter and stricter on this definition of death. But there's the fourth level, and that concerns what about a person who in a near-death state, if instead of the car accident I'm talking about earlier, what if they, because it's very, very common to meet people. It's very, very common to say, I saw deceased loved ones. I saw my parents. I saw my grandparents. And, of course, the response is, well, of course you did. They're the people you would want to see. They're your loved ones. You haven't seen them for years. You love them very much. Of course you would conjure up images of them from when they were alive and from when you were with them. But there is a type of near-death experiences, and they're fairly common. I mean, by fairly common, I mean, I don't mean there's many, many, many of them. I just mean there's more than one or two of these examples I'm given. And let's say that the person they report being with after death is a person who, there's different forms of this. One form would be they're with a person who they did not know died. They say, there's my grandparents. Yeah, they've been dead for 10 years. There's my mom. She's been dead for 3 years. But what was Bob doing there? You know, my cousin Bob who lives in Japan, or my cousin Bob who's in the service. And, you know, he's over here in this country or that country. And then it's just kind of a conundrum. It's just kind of a surprise. And then the near-death experience is over, and you find out later that your cousin was killed in battle, let's say, at that precise moment, or died of a heart attack in Japan within the last hour, something like that. So there are cases that involve others who just died. There are also near-death experiences of somebody who's been dead for quite a while, but they learned something that they did not otherwise know about that person, and it's very, very hard to explain that data outside of the person having told them. So that gets past the flat brain objection, you know, more straightforwardly.
Okay. That is certainly a strange phenomenon to encounter, meeting someone you think is alive in a near-death state and then discovering they're dead. How do skeptics of these sort of phenomena deal with cases like this, or do they just ignore them?
Another way they respond, of course, is the brain state objection that answer that we gave earlier. Well, this is temporal lobe seizure, or this is a cerebral anoxia, oxygen deprivation. Lately, there's been a new response. There's been two experiments that I know of just recently where when you stimulate the temporal lobe in a person's brain, there's a lot of debate about what's going on, but at least the scientific tests reported that they induced out-of-body experiences, not near death, because the person's nowhere near death, but the person started looking at themselves from outside their body. There are some reports that you can duplicate these things by stimulating the portion of the brain, and of course the natural comeback is, well, you see, there's a natural mechanism right there. There's a place you can stimulate to get all this. So what we thought, very natural phenomenon, i.e. the earth is round after all instead of flat. So that's probably a comeback that isn't here yet, because this data are just now starting to come out. But I think what's the problem with all these kind of responses, the similar brain chemistry, we're all alike, aren't we? We can duplicate this in a lab by probing this area of the brain right here. I think virtually every report, there's not a skeptical comeback, of which I'm aware, that deals with these evidential cases. And now they're gaining more and more in number. In fact, these have been written up, the evidential and other, I mean, just the plain near-death phenomena. I have a count of at least 10 to 15 different medical journals in which these accounts have appeared. A lot of them are not evidential. They're simply medical reports on numbers and experiences and things like that. But there are some evidential ones that are coming up now. And the problem with the skeptical comeback is that they can't really account for evidential cases. Let's say I can probe your brain, if I were qualified. I'm not. But if I could do that kind of experiment and you said, oh, well, I'm looking down on myself, or I saw this, and that's, you just must have pushed the right button. I'd say, well, did you see something a mile away that you can report? No, I was just looking at myself here in the laboratory, and it lasted 8.3 seconds. That's how these reports run. You'd say, well, that may or may not be a subjective state. We can't tell. But one thing's for sure, you're not explaining these evidential cases. In fact, one of the two articles that just came out of these experiments, intriguingly, the article in the New England, I believe it's the one in the New England Journal of Medicine, it ends like this. It says something like, my memory of it is something like, what this says about near-death experiences is unclear, because the cases in our laboratory were not in the presence of any kind of difficult circumstances, so we don't know to what extent this can even explain that. When you throw in there, not only is it not near death, but there's no evidential data, that is the thing to explain. You have to explain how people can report things and it can be verifiable when their brain and or heart or even their bodies are in states from which they shouldn't be able to see and report these things.
Okay. So I guess the obvious question is, if these weird evidential near-death experiences exist, and the evidence would seem to suggest that they can't just be written off as some sort of weird brain chemistry or something like that, what do you think it does point to?
Well, I think the best argument, I think the best indication of the argument is that you're dealing with some sort of consciousness after successive, I had these successive definitions, after successive points of near death, heart death, brain death, and then, of course, in some of these cases, you're talking about people who've been dead for a long time. So I think what the best conclusion that I can come up with in about 35 years of looking at this data is that we're talking about consciousness of some sort after death. I call it, J.P. Moreland and I in our book Beyond Death, we call it a Christmas morning view of an afterlife. And what we mean by that is it's sort of like kids waiting for Christmas morning. You can expect something, but you don't really know what you're going to get. You don't really know what's going to be there. One thing, I will tell you some things I don't think come from the data. I don't think the data tell us which religion is true. I think they can start, making us think religiously, but I don't think the data indicate that one religion is true and another one is false. I don't think the data indicate that all religions are true. I don't think it tells us either one of those. And I don't think it even tells us whether you live forever or whether it's, if you only use near-death data, I think you have to use other data to talk about living forever. But only on near-death data, you could say, well, we got something here for some years. Because I say years because that last category, if it's true, they report people who've been dead for 20 years, and the person reportedly gives them information in a near-death while they're in a near-death state. So you could say years. More likely, it's minutes. So it's not eternal life. So I would say, again, what it's not, it's not a particular religion. It's not all religions. It's not eternal life. And one more thing, a lot of the reports are of a specific wonderful place, let's just call it heaven, or in a lesser number of reports are of a very negative place, let's just call it hell. I don't think these near-death experiences can really tell us anything about the so-called furniture of hell or heaven. It might tell us something about those states. But to say I was in this place or that place is more difficult. You can tell the way I'm couching this that I'm still very careful about what we can say and not say. But having said all that, what can we say? And I think this is significant. What can we say? There appears to be what I would call minimalistic life after death. There appears to be something of our conscience that lives beyond our body, what form or what religion or whatever. From these data alone, I don't think we can tell.
Okay. So it would be fair to say that Carl Sagan and, what is his name, Bertrand Russell got a surprise.
Yeah, now that's a very interesting way to put it, because, as you know, the quote-unquote conversion of Anthony Flew, who's been called the world's best-known philosophical atheist, the British philosopher, who about 3 years ago now, actually almost 4 years ago, reported becoming a theist. Tony and I have been friends for 20-some years, and I posed a Bertrand Russell-type question to him, and he was telling me the evidence that he thinks, the evidence that caused him to believe in God after probably being the best. He's published more things on the philosophical defense of atheism than anybody. And now he's walked away from it, and I said, do you think Bertrand Russell's famous comment, there's not enough evidence to believe, do you think Bertrand Russell would be interested in the kind of data you think is out there? And he said, oh, yes. In fact, I think he said something like, I wouldn't be surprised if Bertrand Russell would have been side by side with me if he would have become a theist too. Now, if you apply that kind of thing to near-death experiences, I think that's another kind of experience that these guys would have to pay attention to. As a matter of fact, say Russell, and I mentioned Flew, they had a very well-known sidekick, A.J. Ayer, who's one of the best-known atheists of the last generation, Oxford professor, as was Tony Flew. And Ayer, just before his death, he had one or two near-death experiences. Ayer did. And Ayer wrote an article, I believe the name of the article was What I Saw When I Died. Now, Ayer is a naturalist and is an atheist. And for an atheist to say what I saw when I died, seems to me even that title betrays some of the things you've asked about earlier. I don't know. I would think an atheist shouldn't see anything when they die. They should experience a state. They shouldn't experience any kind of state. That's the point. You can't experience a state in which you don't exist. So A.J. Ayer, before he finally did die, he said, I'm now more open to an afterlife than I was before. So, yeah, I mean, I think these sorts of things introduce states from which people could say, well, you can't tell which religion's true or that all religions are true, and I think that's so. I think you can't use NDEs to do that. But I think you can say, who's the odd man out here? What's the odd philosophy? And I think a strict naturalism that says the natural world is all there is, you're born, you live, you die, that's it, that's what we're most sure of in life, I think that kind of philosophy is most at odds with this these findings.
Okay. So, you're a Christian. How does this NDE stuff play into your faith?
Well, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I am a Christian. During those 10 years of searching, I wondered if there, you know, it, could Christianity be sustained? And I came to the conclusion it was. But, like, it could be. But like I said a moment ago, I don't think I can get there from near-death experiences. What near-death experiences helped me to see is that there's another reality out there, and somebody, or a lot of somebodies, are right that there's an afterlife. But it doesn't tell me which religion's true. How would I get from there's an afterlife to Christianity's true? Well, if that's all I knew, I don't think I could get there. But the alongside near-death experiences, the only topic that I've spent more time studying than near-death experiences is the resurrection of Jesus. And I did my doctoral, my PhD dissertation on that subject many years ago at a secular university. And I argue that you can show that the resurrection is the best explanation of the historical data we have. And I do not mean that in terms of quoting the New Testament to somebody or saying, here we go, in this Christian book we have these Christian evidences. My thesis is what I call a minimal facts argument, and my what I defended in my dissertation and in many books since then is that if I use the data about first century Palestine, if I use the historical data that is readily conceded by atheists, moderates, and conservatives alike, if I use only the atheist data, I have enough material to argue that the resurrection is the best explanation of what happened. So, in a nutshell, if you can get resurrection, and almost every critic who writes is willing to concede something like this, if you get a resurrection, then Christianity is looking really good. Of course, they're skeptics for a reason. They're not going to concede the resurrection. But if you concede the resurrection, now I have two evidences for an afterlife, two sets of evidences, resurrection and near-death experiences. One, near-death experiences is not religion-specific or is not worldview-specific, except to say naturalism looks like it's on tough times. But the resurrection is totally different. It not only says something against naturalism, it says something about a specific kind of religious belief. And if Jesus was raised from the dead, now you're dealing with the life and claims of Jesus.
Okay. Well, one last question. If people wanted to learn more about your work or near-death experiences, where would you recommend?
Well, I have a lot of books in print, but if somebody wants to, those are available from Amazon.com and other things, but if somebody just wants to not pay money and check some of the stuff out, because I'm not trying to make a buck, they can check my website out, which is simply Gary Habermas, H-A-B-E-R-M-A-S, GaryHabermas.com, and I have all kinds of video, audio, written responses, Q&A. There's even a game format that somebody can play, and I try to be fair. There's a bunch of debates. Well, I shouldn't say a bunch, but there's probably half dozen or so dialogues, debates, discussions on my website with skeptics and atheists and different folks like that, and that people can watch it, they can see it, and nothing on my website is for sale, so it's all free of charge, and a person can check some of these things out, and there are plenty of items both on resurrection and on near-death experiences which they can check out for themselves.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us today, Dr. Gary Habermas.
I enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the interview.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Habermas, and I know I found it interesting to record, so hopefully it's giving you something to think about. And I'll talk to you next time. The Sci-Fi Show is copyright Jason Money, 2006. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative License, and the song Big Planet is used by permission of Nova Surfer. More great Nova Surfer tracks can be found at novasurfer.nl.